Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
At ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Almost said Monday. Dan Peck in the studio, running the board, and anchoring the show today because Bill Cameron had a... I'll let Bill talk about it, but Bill is Bill's home today, convalescing, and he will, he's we'll see if we can check in with Bill shortly as we begin today's edition of the show. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Although, schedule's going to be a little bit different as we begin today's show because we're going to try to get Andy Burcham on the air, although I'm going to have to call him, so we may have to take an early commercial break as I am running the board and hosting the show in the studio today. So we'll see if we can get Andy Burcham on the phone shortly. But in the meantime, love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. So hour number one, we will have the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, on the phone. Hour number two, we will have Jake Crane from Crane and Company joining us on the show as we begin today. Auburn baseball getting ready to begin the final series of the season as Auburn and Ole Miss will play in Oxford this weekend. Number two team in the country. What a season for the Auburn baseball team. We'll talk about that with Andy Burcham. A little NBA draft as well, possibly, as the lottery happens last night. The Dallas Mavericks win the 2025 NBA draft lottery. Minuscule chances for the Mavericks. They had to win a coin flip to get the 11th best chances to win, and then with just under 2% chances of winning the lottery, they walk away with the big prize, possibly Cooper Flagg, the forward out of Duke, expected to be the number one overall pick in this year's draft. I'll tell you what we're going to do, because we're going to have Andy Burcham for a while. I'm going to go to commercial real quick in the show. When we come back, we will have our buddy Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers. Dan Peck in the studio. Love to hear from you, 334-321-1390, the Drive hotline presented by Skybar. When we come back, we will have the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. You are listening to The Drive.
At Reynolds Outdoors, they're all about hunting and fishing and loving the great outdoors every day. And if you are too, you'll love the great selection of guns and ammo, bows and arrows, rods and reels, gear and apparel. As an independent family business, Reynolds Outdoors can offer top brand names at hometown prices, plus friendly, local, expert service. So before you hit the woods, the field, or the water, head to Reynolds Outdoors on Geneva Street, Opelika, on Facebook and Instagram, and at reynoldsoutdoors.net.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Experience and knowledge from the pros.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Tuesday edition of The Drive, Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron will join us on the phone later on in both hours of the show. Also, we'll have our visit with Jake Crane in hour number two from Crane & Company. We're going to talk with Andy Burcham in just a second. He's waiting on the phone. I wouldn't keep him waiting, but I just saw the news from, and I guess this is in the last hour and a half, that Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred removed Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson, and other deceased players from Major League Baseball's permanently ineligible list. This is from ESPN.com. Don Van Natta Jr. reporting that Rose and Jackson are now eligible for election into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Manfred's ruling is that the punishment of banned individuals ends upon their deaths, and so someone banned from baseball can be elected posthumously into the Hall of Fame. Permanent. To quote the Manfred release, or this is a letter that Manfred wrote earlier this year to an attorney who petitioned for Rose's removal from the banned list. Quote, I have concluded that permanent ineligibility ends upon the passing of the disciplined individual, and Mr. Rose will be removed from the permanently ineligible list, unquote. So an issue that I feel like my entire life, the issue of Pete Rose and his eligibility to the Hall of Fame has been a hot topic, and we get a pretty major development in that today, as he is now eligible along with Shoeless Joe Jackson for the Baseball Hall of Fame. And with that, we bring in someone who is and we'll talk a lot of Auburn baseball with Andy Burcham. But Andy, I'd love to get your thoughts on that piece of breaking news there that Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson, among others, are now eligible for the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Now, the campaign for Shoeless Joe has been going on for a long, long time. There's a lot of folks that felt he deserved to be in the Hall of Fame, and with Pete Rose, as you mentioned, it's been quite some time since he was banned after it was concluded that he bet as a manager of the Cincinnati Reds. Now it goes to the voters. Now it goes to those that vote for the Hall of Fame, and it's going to be interesting. I don't think that's a slam dunk that either one or both of those will be put into the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying that it should or shouldn't happen. It's just now it goes to the voters, and there's been a lot of voters, especially in the Pete Rose situation, that have been very adamant saying that he doesn't deserve to be in the Hall. They had cover from the commissioner in the fact that they didn't have to make that decision. Now they will, and they will either vote for or will not vote for Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson. You know what? The next thing that comes is a counter to the fact that these banned players cannot be eligible until they die, because there are some high profile individuals out there that have put up Hall of Fame worthy numbers that have not made it in. So is that the case for a Barry Bonds? Is that the case for a Roger Clemens? Is that the case for a Mark McGwire and Rafael Palmeiro at this point, or at some point in their lifetime is, and I'm, you know what? And I guess I say that with, I'm not sure that they are formally banned.
They're on the ballot. Well, you know, a lot of those guys are, you know, the most recent, the committee that put Fred McGriff into the Hall of Fame considered the candidacy of players who had fallen off the ballot. But a Barry Bonds, a Mark McGwire, a Sammy Sosa, and I believe they decided to go with Fred McGriff instead of any of those players a couple of years ago.
Yeah. Then I guess this ruling does not affect them at this point. So it's a very interesting case.
That's a great point, and that's a great point that because they're eligible for inclusion does not necessarily mean the voters will put them in. That's important to consider.
There's been a lot of voters that have been very outspoken that Pete Rose does not deserve to go into the Hall, and now they have the final say as to whether he does. And the same thing for Shoeless Joe Jackson as well.
Really interesting stuff. I did not know how much Shoeless Joe Jackson we were going to get into today, but I saw the news that he's now eligible, you know, per a ruling from Baseball Commissioner Rob Manfred.
I won't be surprised if both are not in the next couple of years, and I'm not sure how they're going to do it, or because I'll be shocked. I'll be surprised, not shocked. I'll be surprised if both aren't included into the Hall of Fame in the near future.
Yeah, I would think that they both fall into players that are reviewed by a committee rather than voted on by the general a Baseball Writers Association of America ballot, and that might help them that it's a smaller pool of people deciding.
Yeah, I don't know exactly who those folks are at this point. So, but I'll be surprised if one, not both, are included in the Hall of Fame in the near future.
Little bit of baseball talk to get us started. As Andy, you've been you got to watch quite a show this weekend at Plainsman Park.
I'm not sure. Well, I've never seen an offensive display by an Auburn team against an SEC team like we saw this past weekend. I mean, yes, Auburn scored 24 runs in the first game against South Carolina on Thursday. But Auburn scored double-digit runs in all three games this past weekend. And there are three Auburn players on this roster, Chris Rembert, Lucas Steele, and Eric Guevara, that all hit over 600 this past weekend. And Guevara, the SEC, and now we find out today, the National Player of the Week hit 800 in an SEC on the week, which is the three SEC games this past weekend against South Carolina. It was
when you hear a guy's hitting 800 too, you might think it's like slap hits and he's beating you know infield singles with his speed or something like that. No. There was solid contact from Mr. Guevara.
Well, all three of those guys that we mentioned all hit multiple home runs this past weekend against South Carolina and had big RBI weeks and big run weeks for Auburn, and all had huge hits in that three-game series against South Carolina. And a three-game series for Auburn that now puts Auburn firmly in the picture, not only to host an NCAA regional for the third time in 4 years, which has never happened in Auburn history, but now puts Auburn strictly in the conversation to be a national seed in the NCAA tournament. And if you win that first round, you win the regional, then you're hosting a super regional, and that would be a first in Auburn history. That's what this past weekend did for Auburn, not to mention moved Auburn to number two in the RPI, number one with strength of schedule, and in one of the polls, the number two team in the country.
Auburn has made it to super regional play a couple of times under Butch Thompson, but you're right, it would be the first time if Auburn advances out of regional play and they remain a national seed, one of the top eight teams in the country, they could be in position to host super regional play at Plainsman Park as well, and how huge that would be. Andy, seeing some of the younger players turn the corner this season, and especially in the second half of SEC play, is that you're seeing, you know, what they learned in their first taste of college baseball, and there's, you know, it's the old saying, you know, you're not a freshman anymore, you're not a rookie anymore by the end of your first season. I wonder if that's really true in the case of some of these freshmen who are really playing their best baseball at the end of the season.
Now, I thought Butch Thompson, I'll give you a little bit of a preview of the pregame show with Butch. He said, it's good to know that this Auburn team doesn't need Ike Irish to carry it all the time or Cooper McMurray to carry it all the time. And while both of those guys had good weekends, it was the young guys. It was Steele, a transfer in from Sanford. It was Guevara, the National Player of the Year, just a sophomore for Auburn. It was Rembert, a true freshman for Auburn, that led the charge this past weekend for Auburn. And I think that's an indication that this Auburn team and what Bub Terrell did this past weekend. And by the way, he's in center field tonight for Auburn, I think. No, he is in center field. I think it's the first start for him in center field tonight for Auburn. So there's a little bit of a preview for you as well. Andres Alvarez will get the start for Auburn. And this is a start. This is a regular start. They're not saying, all right, give us a couple of innings and then we'll go to the pen. They want to see what they want this to be a normal start for Andres Alvarez here tonight. But I mean, and there's another youngster. There's another freshman for Auburn that is playing a key part for Auburn. Same thing could be said about a Christian Chatterton, who has excelled for Auburn down the stretch of this season. There's a lot of these youngsters that's part of this freshman class, highly touted freshman class, that has become a key part of this Auburn team as it makes a run to an NCAA host spot and hopefully being in position to host a super regional as well. And right now, Auburn right now tied for fourth in the SEC. Tied for fourth. I believe this is an Auburn team that was picked 12th in the preseason. And not only are we talking about Chris Rembert as the SEC Freshman of the Year, talking about Sam Dutton as an all-SEC Friday night starter for Auburn and Ike Irish and Cooper McMurray and Chase Fralick as a freshman all-SEC squad member and many on the defensive team. Butch Thompson's name needs to be mentioned as the SEC Coach of the Year as well.
Absolutely, and you mentioned Rembert for Freshman of the Year. This is a season where most teams in the SEC, I'd say there are probably 9 or 10, maybe more, that have a freshman contributing and playing well. And Chris Rembert still has a very compelling argument to be the best of all of them, the best freshman in the country. He is. We get to talk with Derek Fabian on Mondays as part of Tiger Takes, and Derek said, you know, it's somebody who Chris Rembert, somebody who immediately impressed the veterans by doing all the right things and showcasing not just tremendous skill, but also a tremendous character in his interactions with them.
Well, I mean, we saw a glimpse of what Chris can do back in the fall when Auburn played that doubleheader against Florida State in Pensacola. Now, he was probably a little extra juiced in that ball game, or those two games, because Pensacola is his hometown. But he led Auburn offensively in that fall doubleheader against the Florida State ball club that everyone was talking about as a national seed even back in the fall. And Auburn won both of those ball games. And he was the offensive star that day. So we got a glimpse of Chris Rembert. And this is a guy that gives Auburn some flexibility, not only offensively, because he can hit anywhere in the lineup. He's excelled as the leadoff guy. But he can play. He has played second. He has played third. He has played in the outfield in both corner positions. And by the way, he's starting in right field for Auburn tonight. So a guy that gives Butch Thompson some flexibility about where he plays defensively. And where he can put Chris in the lineup right now, of course, he's the leadoff guy.
Talking with Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Andy, the search for, I mean, what Samuel Dutton has provided this team is tremendously important, not just in the production, but in the break the bullpen gets most of the time when Sam Dutton pitches. Like, did Auburn... In your interactions with Butch and the other coaches, do you get a sense that they knew what they were getting in Samuel Dutton, and how much of this has been development since Sam got to campus?
That's a good question, and I don't have the definitive answer, other than to say I think he has been a pleasant surprise for Auburn. I think Auburn knew it was getting a solid bullpen piece that wanted to be a starter. And he was primarily as a freshman. He was in the bullpen last year and at LSU. And I think, you know, his mind was set when he came to Auburn. He wants to be back in the rotation. And not only is he back in the rotation, he's back in the rotation as the Friday guy now for Auburn. That number one starter week in and week out. It's a little bit different now in these Thursday, Friday, Saturday games, but he is still that Friday guy. And he gives Auburn some veteran presence in the rotation, because the other two starters, one is a sophomore that is getting his first starts as a college player this year in Cam Tilley, and then also Christian Chatterton, who's a true freshman as well. So Dutton is the veteran. Dutton is the old guy in the rotation for Auburn right now. So he gives you some veteran presence there as well. And what was so interesting to me about this past weekend, what was lost after Auburn scores over 40 runs on the weekend against South Carolina, is how well Auburn played defensively. And that has been the trend for Auburn this season. But Cam Tilley was Auburn's best starter last weekend. And he struggled a bit in the first inning. But boy, it gave Auburn four solid innings, in that run shortened game on Thursday, and he was Auburn's best starter last weekend. Dutton was hit around a little bit, and Chatterton had trouble throwing his changeup in that doubleheader on Saturday, and yet Auburn found a way to win both of those ball games, and Tilley was the best starter of the three. And that's who you will see this Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Ole Miss: Cam Tilley, Samuel Dutton, and Christian Chatterton.
It sounds like there's confidence, and there's been confidence in Cam Tilley's stuff all along, right? And it's just a matter of putting it together and becoming that consistent starter that a lot of folks think he can be.
Well, coming out of high school, I mean, this is a guy that played for Team USA. This was a high school All-American. I think Auburn thought that they were getting this kind of guy even last year in Cam Tilley. And he worked around some injuries, and it just didn't click for him in his freshman season at Auburn. But isn't it fun to watch him round into shape as Auburn makes this run at the end of this season and gets ready for hopefully another run to the College World Series in Omaha, Nebraska. And then you still have a Cade Fisher who has pitched better of late for Auburn, and you hope that Andreas Alvarez is that fourth starter for you. And multiple starting pitchers, when it comes to postseason, at times are a luxury for a team. You get guys like this, and if you've got this pitching staff rounding into form like we hope it is with this ball club, I think this Auburn team is extraordinarily dangerous as it gets ready for the SEC tournament and the NCAA tournament as well.
Andy, we haven't talked too much about Ike Irish in our baseball conversation here, but he's been such a huge part of not just this season, but you know, the team since his arrival. Major League Baseball draft is coming up. I believe it's the same week as SEC Media Days in Atlanta. That's part of the whole like baseball festivities with the All-Star break going on. But Ike Irish expected to be a pretty early selection in this year's draft. What is it that, like, as someone who's gotten to see virtually every at bat of his Auburn career, like what is it that sets Ike apart?
He is an incredibly driven and focused individual with a great deal of confidence, and he has every reason to have that kind of confidence. This is a guy that came to Auburn with over 40 college credits under his belt and graduated in 3 years at Auburn. His mother is an educator. I mean, he had a plan in coming to Auburn. One of those was to graduate. He did that in 3 years. One of those was to be a high round, hopefully a first-round draft pick after his third year at Auburn, and he's certainly on the way to doing that. I mean, you know, Ike is hitting .345 with 13 homers, 48 runs batted in, and he's 10 of 10 in stolen bases, and he can play a number of positions for you as well. I mean, he is doing everything that he planned to do at Auburn, and the one missing piece is Omaha for Ike Irish. And that all lays ahead of Ike and this Auburn baseball team. He has been clutch for Auburn since the first day that he stepped foot on this Auburn campus. You know, you look at the weekend that he had at Texas, and he was literally the only player that drove in a run against the number one team in the country, and that included home runs in all three games of that series. Now, what's overshadowed is the fact that Auburn lost that series. Auburn was swept in that series, and that's the last series that Auburn lost. So Ike Irish has been one of the leaders. He's one of the legacy leaders on this ball club. I was told that after in that crazy weekend, 2 weekends ago at Tennessee, when Auburn lost the heartbreaker in game two against Tennessee, and the place is going crazy and Tennessee is being Tennessee, that Ike was the guy after game two that rallied that team. Basically, hey, we're not losing game three of this series. Get ready for game three. And Auburn went out and won the game 8-1. So it shows me, the leadership ability that Ike Irish has with this Auburn ball club.
And on a team with so many young contributors, I mean, yeah. It's almost like a luxury to have a guy who's been a standout for 3 years.
He's not the only one. I mean, Cooper McMurray joins the likes of Brian Fletcher and Hunter Morris, and of guys that have hit double-digit home runs in three consecutive years. And there's another of the veteran leaders on this Auburn team. And what's so different about this team is that McMurray and Irish and Fabian aren't the only guys that are contributing for Auburn game in and game out. They are, but guys like Chris Rembert and Eric Guevara and Chase Frehlich and Lucas Steele and Bub Terrell, and there are others, Eric Snow, who's back in the lineup tonight for Auburn. I mean, these are guys, they're getting production all up and down the lineup, and that's what you want as you get ready for the last series of the regular season and the SEC tournament starting next week.
Love a Brian Fletcher name drop whenever we can work it into the show. Brittany, his sister is an old friend of mine, so that's very cool. Love the whole Fletcher family. Jacksonville State tonight, final home game of the season of the regular season for the Auburn baseball team as they welcome in the Gamecocks.
A ball club that is vastly improved from a year ago, 31-21. They have not lost a series in Conference USA since they lost that heartbreaker to Auburn in Jacksonville, when Auburn won 4-3 on the Lucas Steele pinch hit home run in the top half of the ninth in Jacksonville. This team has been on a run since that. They have won 5 of their last 6, including taking 2 of 3 against Louisiana Tech this past weekend. They're getting ready for their final series against Louisiana Tech this weekend, and then they go to Liberty for the Conference USA tournament. Steve Beezer, the former Missouri head coach, has done a terrific job in his second year in Jacksonville. They have the third, they are number three on the list of turnaround teams from a year ago. They've improved 13 games from a year ago. So this game really is a game of two teams that have improved vastly from last year, both Jacksonville State and the Auburn Tigers.
Is there some college baseball being played in this state this year or what? Between Auburn and some of the mid-majors?
Well, we talked about this during basketball season, didn't we? But you look at what South Alabama has done. Look at what Troy is doing right now. And
a lot of folks project Troy as the 2 seed in the Auburn regional.
I wouldn't be shocked if that isn't the case. UAB swept Auburn, won both games against Auburn this season. So, and a Samford ball club that Auburn played last week that gave Auburn two really tough games in the midweek. So, yeah, this is a good year for the state of Alabama in baseball. Alabama obviously is a team that a lot of folks are talking about as a possible host site in the regionals. So, take a look across this state. It's a good year for a lot of sports, not just basketball.
Andy Burcham at the ballpark getting ready for Auburn and Jacksonville State. You can catch that on Wings 94.3, 6 o'clock, the first pitch of tonight's game final regular season home game for Auburn, although they look like they're in position to maybe host some baseball in the postseason. A couple other sports, Andy, real quick. Got a shout-out Nick Kleinard and the guys, right?
Yeah, they only have an 18-stroke lead after day two of the regional. 18-stroke lead.
18.
After day two, that is a team that is trying to win a second straight national championship. They're well on their way to the national championship tournament. They have put themselves in great position. Auburn has the second, third, and fourth best players individually after the second day of the regional. Now, granted, this is on Auburn's home course, but anyone that's ever played the Auburn University Club knows how very tough this golf course is. And Auburn is just tearing it up. Round three is set for tomorrow. Admission is free at the Auburn University Club. Just a great chance to go out and see the next PGA, the next crop of PGA superstars out at the AU Club. And then that team will be heading to La Costa for a defense of its national championship coming in. Our best wishes, my best wishes as well, to Auburn softball as they get ready for the NCAA tournament. That starts on Friday at 4 o'clock. I believe I'm right. Let me double check. I've got my schedule right in front of me here. 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock on Friday as Auburn plays South Florida in the first round of the NCAA tournament down in Tallahassee. Auburn track and field getting ready for the SEC Outdoor Championships, then the NCAA Regionals and the Nationals where Auburn finished 1 point on the men's side from a national championship a year ago. So a lot of things going on for Auburn right now, and still some Auburn sports out there that are playing very, very well and getting ready for postseason.
That Auburn-South Florida softball game, national television, ESPNU, on Friday, 11 a.m. Central. So folks can watch Auburn in the Tallahassee Regional first year in the postseason under Team Malvo. Great stuff, as always, Andy. Always a pleasure.
My pleasure. We'll be on the air tonight at 5:45. Athletic Director John Cohen expected to join the broadcast tonight. So who knows what we'll say.
Very cool. Folks can catch that on Wings 94.3. Until next time, Andy, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it, bud. War Eagle.
Andy Burcham, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, joining us. Really appreciate Andy making some time for us as Auburn gets ready to play Jacksonville State tonight in the final regular season home game of the year for the baseball team. 334-321-1390, the number to dial. Really appreciate Andy joining us. That the phone number brought to you by our friends at Skybar. You can catch the podcast if you missed any of Andy Burcham podcast, The Drive, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. We will have more for you when we come back. Stick around. This is The Drive.
Jonathan here with University Ace Hardware. At University Ace, we make renting easy. Pick up a pressure washer.
On ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Really appreciate Andy Burcham joining us. Nice long chat with Andy in the previous segment. You can catch all that on the podcast. If you missed any of our conversation with Andy Burcham, go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. That's all presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Really appreciate their continued sponsorship of The Drive, the podcast, and the text box. 334-321-1390, The Drive hotline, presented by our friends at Skybar. But let's make an outgoing call and bring in Bill Cameron, who is Bill, I'm going to let you tell the story of why you're doing the show from home today.
Well, because I found that unintentionally sliding sideways on the kitchen tile is good for your knee.
Oh boy!
I came in from outside. You know, it obviously has rained so much over the last few days, and came in and stepped up. We've got a step up to the kitchen from the den where you walk in. And it wasn't when I stepped up with my left foot, it's when I lifted my right foot to step up. My sandals were slick. I didn't realize it on the bottom. And tile and wet doesn't work very well.
Oh, no.
So
not good for the traction, right?
No, not at all. And it started off like I was headed toward a split, but the problem was the cabinets were only a couple of feet to my left. So when my foot hit the cabinet, my knee just sort of bent sideways, and I went down there. So, yeah, I don't think this is good. I don't think it's just a sprain or a strain. So I have an appointment with our Hour 2 sponsors in the morning.
It's, you know, it's a question people ask sometimes when you hurt like a lower body part. But the thought of, like, did you hear a pop or did you feel a tear or something like that? Like, in the moment, you don't know, right? Like,
I don't know. I just knew as I was headed down that the leg was not aiming.
Oh boy! Well,
the right direction as I was going down. So,
well, hour number.
So, yeah, I mean, I can put weight on it.
Okay, that's a good sign.
I can shuffle, but any side to side attempts are. No.
Interesting. No. Okay. So yeah. So you could
so
be.
That's
you,
what I mean.
You could be looking at an IL stint possibly on this.
Oh yeah. I think it's hard to imagine that I won't.
Oh boy, we could be making a roster move here on the drive with Bill's with Bill's leg. Well, you know, Bill, I don't know how plugged in you've been to sports news today, but
I've been sitting here reading things for the last couple of hours.
Okay, that's good news, I suppose.
I'm okay. Yeah.
No, I didn't see until, you know, it was right when the show started that I saw the news about Manfred removing and I guess, I mean, Don Van Natta has this at ESPN.com, but the ruling from Major League Baseball's commissioner that players who are banned from baseball, that ban ends upon their deaths, which means deceased players,
lifetime bans.
Yeah,
now mean while they're alive.
Deceased players who were banned from baseball during their lives, like Shoeless Joe Jackson and Pete Rose, would now be eligible for inclusion into the Hall of Fame. What do you think?
I think that makes sense. I mean, so you have the black. Basically, it's the Black Sox and Pete Rose. There may be a couple of other guys. But I mean, obviously the biggest names are Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson. I would guess probably the next biggest name is Eddie Seacott, who was one of the ace pitchers of that Black Sox team. But he seemed much more involved than Shoeless Joe did. It's really going to be interesting to see what happens with this. I mean, I would expect Shoeless Joe Jackson to be in the Hall of Fame as soon as possible, and I believe from reading some things, this was one of the years of the classic you know, the old timers,
the classic, the classic baseball era committee.
Right, right. Was this? They go in 3-year cycles, and so since this was one of those years, 2027 would be the next time that any of these players who are newly eligible for the Hall of Fame would be able to get in. But I would expect Shoeless Joe Jackson to definitely be in 2027. It'll be really interesting to see about Pete. Pete deserves, I mean, look.
Rose would be eligible by the same committee, by the way. That would also be the Historical Oversight Committee is the group that, that reevaluates players who were not elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Conventionally, different groups of people meet to discuss players from different eras. That's the group that elected Fred McGriff to the Hall of Fame just over a year ago. And they could, in December of 2027, they could meet and consider Rose. And I believe it's 16 people, and you need 12 yeses from the 16 to get in.
I believe Dick Allen and Dave Parker got in as, you know, that classic era last time as well. So yeah, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see what happens with Pete because of the news that came out, not, you know, about his the moral issues with Pete Rose is something I think that's going to be a bigger problem for him than the fact that he bet as a manager, because his playing numbers, I mean, just when you look at the numbers, he's the all-time hit leader. I mean, Charlie Hustle was, like him or not, I mean, he was a great, great baseball player and played to win 100% of the time. I mean, his on-field numbers, there's no way he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but I still think there's going to be some hesitation from some of the voters just because of the moral questions about Pete.
Well, and I do, like, I think that a lifetime ban probably should end upon lifetime. I'm also sort of the opinion that a lifetime ban from baseball maybe even shouldn't include the Hall of, like, the Hall of Fame could
Hall
almost
fame.
Be
a no,
separate
I agree.
A separate thing.
Yeah,
that, you know, let the voters consider them on their own merits, and a ban from baseball should mean, yeah, you're not involved with teams, you're not, you know, you can't be employed, you know, those sorts of things, you know, but in the case of I've heard people sort of say, like, well, Rose only bet on the Reds to win. And it's like, that's, you know what I mean? I mean, that's.
Everybody knew that it was against the rules and it was a lifetime ban if you were caught doing it. It didn't matter if you were doing it to win or lose. And sure, I guess that's not as bad. That's not as bad as throwing games. No, it's not, but it's still absolutely against the rules of
and
the
aren't
game.
aren't you providing some info to your bookie on the days you don't bet your team to win? I don't know. Like, that would be, I would wonder if you're only betting your team to win sometimes, what message are you sending on the days you don't bet on your team to win in that city? You know, one of many, you know, sort of things that pop up in that. Andy mentioned that this could lead to, you know, wondered if this could lead to a reevaluation of the players who have been accused of performance enhancing drug use, and whether or not, like, they could be reevaluated. And I mean, it doesn't change their status because none of those players were banned. Like,
those players are on the ballot, have been on the ballot.
Yeah, I believe Bonds and McGuire were among the players considered by the committee when they decided to vote for Fred McGriff, and there wasn't a ton of support for Bonds and McGuire on that committee. So, I mean, I think it's just because it's players who seem like they should be in, who aren't in the Hall of Fame. Like, they all sort of get lumped together, and I'd like to see the story of baseball told in the Hall of Fame, which includes guys who, you know, maybe broke a rule or maybe did some things that
were caught.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
That's the other thing. There's no way of knowing since everybody wasn't tested, and I don't doubt the players that say they have no sympathy for these players because they were breaking the rules and they cheated. I understand that. But still, since you weren't able to test everyone, you don't know that some of the players that are in you know, didn't do the same thing and just weren't caught.
And you don't know how many of the players that Bonds and McGuire and Sosa homered against were also
were also
using performance enhancing drugs at the same time. No, I agree. You know, and I hope that that ultimately, you know, sort of truth wins out in these situations. And in the case of Shoeless Joe and Rose, like I think that it's probably a more honest telling of the history of baseball. If you put those guys in the Hall of Fame,
what would you do? You're gonna forget the McGuire Sosa years and
Barry Bonds never happened, right? Yeah, so just I mean, there's a 20-year period of baseball where there's forget about him.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, So do a little piece of breaking news, and we get to talk a little baseball there. So hope you're feeling better, Bill, and I imagine you're not going to the ballpark tonight.
Oh no. No, not going to make it to the ballpark tonight. We weren't going anyway. It's the last home game, and Matt and Ariel were going to go. They had a Hall of Fame add-on, so they were going to use our tickets. And we're going to watch Kennedy this evening. I don't know how much running around I'm going to be able to do with her though tonight.
You're going to have to explain.
She's not going to understand that.
The bum wheel to Kennedy. All right. Well, So it's Alvarez tonight, isn't it, for Auburn?
Yeah, he didn't get to pitch any over the weekend, and you know, he's had his moments as well. What a freshman class! I heard you and Andy talking about it. We've talked about it a little bit, but I mean, this freshman class has been just fabulous for Auburn, and I think Dre Alvarez is another guy that has a lot of potential, and you're going to see a lot more of him down the road as well.
Yeah, high quality opponent tonight as well. Andy was talking about the improvement, the improved Jacksonville State program, and just another. I mean, in a year where there's so much good baseball, college baseball being played. I mean, this is an incredible Auburn season. Alabama's in the mix to be a top 16 seed in the NCAAs. Yeah. Troy is having a remarkable year down. With Skylar Meade, the Jacksonville State, UAB, South Alabama, like there's a lot of really solid baseball being played in the state this year. And Auburn will face one of those mid-major teams tonight. Wings 94.3. You can catch Auburn baseball against Jacksonville State. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back to wrap up hour number one. You are listening to The Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
The perfect spot for your... Online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron on the phone. Drew on vacation. Andy Burcham joined us earlier in the hour. You can catch all of that on the podcast when the show is over. Podcast The Drive presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Mentioned a little bit, Bill, the Dallas Mavericks defying the odds and winning last night's NBA draft lottery. It is very funny to me that the Mavericks could very well, like you could argue, they're in a better position now than they were before they made the Luka trade. It's funny how things work out on that front. And also, And look, I'm not a conspiracy theorist. You know, I trust the NBA when the NBA says these things are random. It is the second time in 6 years that a team has traded their franchise player to the Lakers and then won the lottery. Just a couple of months later, after Anthony Davis was traded from the Pelicans to the Lakers, and then the Pelicans won the lottery with long odds and got Zion. Now you have the Mavericks doing it, but I think ultimately, I mean, I like the existence of the lottery. I don't think that just having the worst record should guarantee you the worst team. And this, you know, sort of incentivizes.
It's also done to try to keep teams from throwing.
It discourages tanking, which I think is probably a good thing in the NBA. Even though, even discouraging tanking, you're still going to have some pretty terrible teams. But it's the Cooper flag, and I mean you probably shouldn't be shocked that he ends up in a major media market either. I mean there's but Cooper flag will be presumably the number one pick of the Dallas Mavericks, and you know Bruce and Tahad have both talked about Tahad Pettiford's decision could be influenced by the teams picking you know, 20 through 30 or something like that in the draft. And in the case of this year's draft, you have some, you know, most of those picks have been traded like at least once. So it's not not like a clean order of the best teams in the NBA or something like that. So it, you know, it could still, you know, it's a mixed bag of teams trying to win right now and teams trying to collect assets and win later. But I think so I wonder how much information Tahad truly got from the draft lottery. But yeah, now he knows who's picking at the end of the first round.
Yeah, and I saw today a couple of more projections that have both Tahad and Janai early second round. We'll see. Again, things still look positive for Tahad to be back at Auburn, but you we'll still have to wait and see.
Pretty consistent, Janai Broome being projected as, you know, one of the first 10, 15 picks of the second round. And if Tahad is in the draft, that's where a lot of the mock drafts seem to think he could end up as well. Bill Cameron joining us on the phone. We'll have Bill for a segment or two in hour number two as well. We will talk with Jake Crane from Crane and Company as well. You are listening to the Tuesday edition of The Drive.
Production.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron hanging out with us on the phone, working from home today. Our buddy Drew is on vacation, so I'm in charge of the button pushing as well as anchoring the show from inside the studio. Fun first hour. Talked a little bit about the breaking news regarding Rob Manfred's decision to reinstate reinstate players who had been banned from baseball for life but have since died. And put those players back on the Major League Baseball or on the Baseball Hall of Fame ballot. Players including Shoeless Joe Jackson and Pete Rose. Talked a little bit about that with both Bill and Andy in hour number one. You can check that out on the podcast if you missed any of it. Podcast of The Drive presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Auburn baseball tonight playing their final regular season home game of the season as they welcome the Jacksonville State Gamecocks to town. You can catch that on Wings 94.3. Bill Cameron will not be at the ballpark tonight.
No, not going to make it tonight. Definitely got to stay off the leg as much as possible and see what the doc says in the morning.
You heard Andy's conversation with us, and Andy, you know, went into great detail about some of the things that have gone right for this team. And it's amazing, Bill, to think just a couple of weeks ago, even when the team was playing well in SEC play, you'd look at the lineup, you know, especially immediately around Ike Irish, right? That, you know, the spots, you know, right above and right below him. You look at the rotation after Sam Dutton, and you thought there's the potential for this team to improve a lot between now and the end of the season, and I think we've seen that.
Oh yeah, there's no question. I mean, it really has. It's been the whole team seems to have gotten hot. It's crazy. Remember a few weeks ago? I guess it was 3 weeks ago when it looked like the offense was going into a bit of a slump, and you wondered. Some people wondered, how can a whole team do that? That's just sort of the way it is, it seems like, in baseball. And right now, they've really been swinging the bat well. But, I mean, the lineup has shifted. I mean, we've seen Eric Guevara move from near the bottom of the order up to the top. You know, when you've got somebody like that who is not just getting on base, but driving the ball as well as he is. I mean, Chris Rembert has been a fantastic leadoff hitter. Auburn had gone through two or three different guys before Chris settled in as the leadoff man. And now with Guevara, you know, guys like Guevara and then Ike and then Cooper and then, you know, Cade Ballou still working his way back, getting healthy. But, you know, Chase Frelick and, I mean, just on and on with the Bub Terrell. Just the depth of this lineup is something that really makes it, it puts a lot of pressure on the opposing pitchers.
Certainly, and for Auburn, the you know, one more SEC series this weekend against Ole Miss, and Auburn in position to potentially get that four seed and play and have you know, have one of the top, I mean, not only secure their spot as one of the top eight teams in the national draw, but they could be one of the top four seeds in the SEC going into the tournament.
And that's something, I mean. Sure, you'd love to win everything, and winning the SEC tournament isn't going to be wouldn't put as much stress on your pitching staff as it usually would in the past, especially if you're a top four seed. You get a double bye. I mean, the top eight seeds get a bye because teams 9 through 16 play in round one, and then teams 5 through 8 play the winners there before teams 1 through 4 play on the third day of the tournament. So, you know, you'd have the opportunity to go through with a single elimination tournament of being able to just go with your normal rotation. Just go with three starting pitchers if you have that double bye. So it's a great opportunity for the teams to get there. Auburn, you know, Auburn's got a great shot. They're tied for that fourth spot right now, even though they'd be sixth with the tiebreakers because of Vandy sweeping Georgia. But if Auburn were to be able to win at least as many games as Vandy this weekend and one more than Georgia, then Auburn's the four seed.
Right, and it's an, it's because of the new format in the SEC, it's a little bit like basketball, right? The top four break straight to the quarterfinal, and you have to win three games to win the SEC tournament. For Auburn, it would be the first SEC tournament win since the late 90s. And, yeah, I think that format, you mentioned the way that the previous SEC tournament format would really wear on a pitching staff. Like the winning team in the SEC tournament really had to use a lot of arms to get there and to win. The losing team, you know, in the finals had to use a lot of arms to get there, and it may not set you up for success in the NCAA tournament. I think this new format is far less grueling.
Oh, there's no question about it. Before with that double elimination, anybody who got bumped into the loser's bracket was going to have to win a couple of more games to be able to get back up there on the top line. And you'd see teams that would throw some guys that really hadn't been used in those situations all year long to try to save their pitchers. And you don't want to have somebody overdo it and have to come back on short rest when you're trying to fight your way through, you know, through a loser's bracket or something like that. Now there's no more concern of that. I mean, you lose, you're done. Hey, for most SEC teams, it's not going to be a terrible situation because three-quarters of these teams, 12 of the 16, look like they're in no matter what. And then you've got, you know, Mississippi State is still fighting to try to get in. If they win a ball game, they've got a good shot of getting in. Now for A&M, South Carolina, Missouri, they may have to win it. A&M may be able to get in if they get all the way to the title game. But that means they'd have to win four straight. So I don't know that that's very likely for them. But for the rest of the teams, you know, it's like give it your best shot. And, hey, if you don't win, you're still going to get the call and find out where you're seated in the tournament.
Looks like things are solidifying a little bit in the Auburn rotation, right, with the second straight weekend where you're going to see Tilly and then Dutton, right, and then Chatterton. I wouldn't rule out the possibility of Cade Fisher or even Alvarez maybe making some noise if they can close strong, but those three guys look like they have, you know, they've worked their way into spots as Auburn starters.
Yeah, and it's good to see Cam this past week against South Carolina. Of course, Auburn, you know, gave him the most unbelievable support you could ever ask for, but he only gave up one run in five innings, which was the longest that he'd ever gone in his career. It was just his second collegiate start.
And he had a lot of downtime between appearances in that game too.
Yeah.
When your team's scoring 20-something runs
in the dugout like I said, Auburn scored 3, 5, 7, and 9 runs in different innings in that ball game, and I think there were 14 or maybe 15 of them were scored while he was in there in the first 5 innings. So that can be difficult for a pitcher, but Tilly handled it well. And
stay on that for a sec though, Bill. So what's going to make that difficult for a pitcher? Just the amount of time, like the fact that he can stiffen up and lose some of that juice between, you know, when you take such a long break between pitches.
Yeah, I mean it's sort of like, you know, you get into a rhythm too. You get out there and things are going well and you're throwing strikes, and then you have to come into the dugout and just sit. And your arm can get a little tight, but you also can just get a little off of that timing and the rhythm that you had when you get back out there. Sometimes pitchers get back out and they want to rush. They want to go ahead and try to jump back out there, and you'll see them either overthrow or, just start missing a little bit and then trying to overcompensate. So, yeah, it can be really tough to sit in the dugout. Now, it's great. You want your team to be scoring. You don't want to come in and just barely get a chance to, get a sip of water, and all of a sudden you're back out of the mound.
Yeah, what a development that would be for Auburn. Andy was talking about Cam Tilly's credentials. Like if he starts to put it together, at the end of this season, it could be huge for the Auburn baseball team.
Well, I mean, you look around and you see it everywhere in college baseball. I mean, the jump from high school to college baseball, especially from high school to the SEC, is tremendous. It's even bigger than it used to be because the SEC is so talented now. It is very much like AA baseball. And so that is a huge step to make, even for the guys who, you know, are getting the opportunities like Cam did to pitch for Team USA, traveling and going at some of the best young competition that there is, either nationally or internationally. But still, you're going out there and you're going against these, soon-to-be professionals every single weekend, and it's just difficult. And you look around and you've seen it at every school that a lot of guys who have the tremendous credentials coming out of high school, it's a struggle for them for a year, sometimes two or three, before they really get the confidence. Because when you've been the best, or you know, you've been as good as anybody you've been playing, and all of a sudden you're playing against guys that are better just because they're older. I mean, you may be as talented, but they've got the experience. They know how to handle some losses, some negative outings, but you may not have had any of those. You go out and it's a shock to the system, and you'll see some of the greatest players in Major League Baseball. You look back at their college careers and you go, golly, that freshman and sophomore numbers in college weren't that spectacular. How this guy become so good? It's because they have the talent, but they've got to have the confidence and belief in themselves, and that's just part of it, and something that can play into, you know, when people want to just write somebody off because he has a struggling first year, when you're making that jump, such a big jump from high school to the SEC.
And then there's Chatterton, right? I mean, you think about with Cam Tilly, we've talked about sort of like what he provides. Right. We've mentioned all season the potential of Christian Chatterton as a guy who could have a huge college baseball career.
Yeah, I mean, because first of all, he's not just, I mean, when I start talking about him being able to throw multiple pitches for strikes, people start thinking, well, he's a junk baller. He's not a junk baller. He can still bring it 90 plus, but to be able to have those other pitches and the confidence and the ability to throw them for strikes in just about any situation, that's something most 18-year-olds don't have. And he has been able to do that many times this year. He had that stretch of 4 weeks where he allowed 4 hits. Just phenomenal because he can keep batters off balance so much. And yeah, he's another one of those guys that that's why I said, what an unbelievable freshman class this is, because it's not the norm to see multiple freshmen on a contending team putting up the numbers that these guys are.
Sure, especially, I mean, we talk about it more in football and men's basketball, Bill, but the thought that in this era of college athletics, guys are sticking around and teams are older and there are more options in the portal than ever before, and to see one of the best teams in the SEC, one of the best teams in the country, have so many first and second year players contributing all over the field. Like, that's, I mean, and yes, Andy mentioned it, and there are multiple coaches with good arguments, including Schlossnagel at Texas. You know, I think Butch is putting together a pretty significant SEC Coach of the Year, SEC Manager of the Year resume.
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any question. The fact that Texas has now lost, you know, five of their last six conference games.
Texas wasn't picked 12th in the preseason either, Bill. Texas wasn't picked 12th in the SEC preseason.
No, you're right.
I mean, which to me would also play in. I mean, it's not just about who overachieved. Like, that shouldn't be the only measure of who deserves Coach of the Year. But I think in the case of this Auburn team, I mean, they're bouncing back from really tough year last year. They went out and made some changes to the roster, but a lot of it is guys continuing their development and turning the corner, or Auburn making the right decisions on the recruiting trail. So yeah, I would hope voters take a look at Butch as maybe the Coach of the Year. 334-321-13. Oh, go ahead, Bill.
No, I was going to say, yeah, and like Andy said, when you've got the number one strength of schedule in the country, you're ranked as high as number two by Baseball America after those preseason projections. Yeah, that it's going to be hard to not notice what Butch has done.
Wings 94.3 will have the action for you tonight as Andy and the gang call things from Plainsman Park. Did you hear Andy mention they're expecting John Cohen on the broadcast tonight? Auburn athletic director John Cohen, no stranger to a baseball broadcast, is probably going to throw on a headset.
He's pretty comfortable. He's pretty comfortable there in the booth, and I mean, he's always around the ballpark, so. So that's a great opportunity,
and a lot of exciting things happening on campus with regards to facilities and also, yeah, I mean, of course, with the number one golf team and playing their regional right now, like there's going to be ample stuff for.
They're playing with their regional right now.
That's right, and yeah, you're right. I mean, they are 18 up going into tomorrow and looking like they're in excellent position to head to California to defend their national championship. We're going to take a break and come back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Thank you, Bruce. Welcome back to The Drive. Hour number two. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron on the phone after a slip and fall. Can we call it that, Bill? Did you stay up, or was it just a slip?
Yeah, that's pretty safe. I definitely a slip and slide. I didn't mean to, but yeah, you're right.
Oh boy, yeah, little side to side knee concerns maybe, and Bill,
yeah,
I think
that is definitely the concern right now. I can get up, it's crazy. I'm my wife had double knee replacement, so we've got a couple of things that can help me get around, and I can actually walk forward pretty fine. It's just anything at all, side to side, is
is
not working.
Well, I hope that you go see someone who knows exactly what to do in this situation, Bill. And in fact, that's who sponsors hour number two of this show.
Yes, the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, locations in Auburn and Opelika. I will be in the Opelika one in the morning. And definitely check them out if you have any concerns with the joint. They are the folks to go see. The Orthopedic Clinic, check them out at orthoclinic.com.
Yeah, and so as we mentioned earlier, if you've missed any of the show, check out the podcast because our buddy Andy Burcham joined us in hour number one. Talked a lot about the Auburn baseball season, and of course Auburn still with some significant baseball games coming up. We didn't really talk too much basketball. I mean, you have the NBA draft order after last night. I don't know honestly if it has a serious impact on Tahad and his decision as far as the teams that are now picking 20 through 30 in the first round. I mean, you have some rebuilding teams. You have some teams trying to win right now. You have some teams that are sort of, you know, they're half in, half out on if they're in compete now mode or in rebuild mode. So we'll see what kind of feedback Tahad is getting as Auburn waits for his decision. Yeah. And what a huge decision it would be for Auburn to potentially get another year of Tahad Pettiford.
Oh yeah, no question about it. I mean, there is there's more than a little bit of basketball news. I mean, obviously, with the Mavs winning the lottery last night and the Celtics losing Jason Tatum.
Yeah, Tatum thing's terrible, and it's
man,
it's,
no kidding.
And it's not a. I mean, not only does it probably spell doom for the Celtics in a series that was already trending away from them against the Knicks, and boy, will the Knicks will remind them of that series win. I think for a while now.
If they
eliminate the champion Celtics from the playoffs, but also, I mean, the Celtics were. I mean, folks thought they could be players for Giannis. Folks thought they could be, you know, sort of like there's other considerations. And if Jason Tatum's out a year, which is probably
he's going to be out for a while. He had surgery for that for the Achilles. Achilles.
I mean, I know. I mean, Kobe tore his Achilles and was back 6-7 months later, but he wasn't himself, and he got hurt again shortly thereafter. You know, most folks, you know, it's 10 months or a year. Which probably puts, you know, most of next season in jeopardy for Jason Tatum. So it's a really, really disappointing development for Celtics fans and the Knicks. You know, they are on the verge of the Eastern Conference Finals, Bill. It's like the 90s again with the way things could be going for our buddy Jasher is fired up about that.
Oh yeah, you know that. I mean, I saw where they had been the seventh. Seventh best favorite, and now they're the favorite to win the East, and the second favorite overall.
Yeah, I mean this is a New York team that is defying expectations in this year's NBA playoffs for sure. We're going to talk with Jake Crane in the next segment. Talk a little Auburn football, Auburn basketball. Probably talk a little bit about last night's draft as well. Waiting to hear. I mean, the house settlement stuff, Bill. It seems like we don't have. It's a matter of waiting to hear approval from Judge Wilkins, who has the material. Yeah, it's been a week, and you know, it seems like, you know, when you talk to folks, trending towards approval, but waiting for an official decision.
Yeah, we've got that coming up, and then we've got SEC Media Day is not too far away with, you know, word coming out a few days ago that ESPN's ready to kick in an extra $50 to $80 million to get the SEC to play that ninth conference game. But the SEC wants to see, first of all, what happens here with this agreement and then what is going to happen with the playoffs as far as expansion.
Certainly. I mean, that's a I think that it's tough to imagine the SEC making a decision about the schedule and about a ninth game without the playoffs as a serious consideration. And I mean, look, I would love to see a ninth game replace a buyout game for, like, I mean, not only because you're improving the product by providing more competitive football, but you would preserve
the rivalry.
You'd preserve a lot of important rivalry games.
Oh yeah, I mean, Auburn, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee. That's the only way they're going to be able to stay on there on a regular basis, is to have a nine-game conference schedule. And the big stumbling block had appeared to be, well, we need the extra money. Now ESPN's saying we'll give you the extra money, but the SEC wants to know, yeah, but what about the playoff situation? We don't want to play an extra game that might cost us a team or two being able to get in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I would hate for that to be a reason to stay at 8 conference games. Like I understand.
Well, you know it is.
Yeah, I know. I just, you know, with the way the schedule is now, I'd hope that eventually, you know, common sense prevails there and you get the better schedule. But you know, the playoff inclusion is going to be a huge sticking point. I'll tell you what, Bill, we'll go to break, and when we come back, I will talk with Jake Crane, and then we'll catch up with you before the show's over, all right?
All right, sounds good.
All right, very cool. Bill Cameron, working from home today. When we come back, Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Stick around. This is The Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7
and online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, running the controls, pushing the buttons. Bill working from home after a slip and fall that is you know, he's risking a stint on the IL possibly after the incident earlier today. But we may check back in with Bill before the show is over, or we'll just talk to him tomorrow. We are thrilled in hour number two to welcome in our usual guest at the bottom of the hour, which is our good buddy from Crane & Company. The incomparable Mr. Jake Crane. What's up, buddy?
What's up, man? Just want to say hope Bill's doing okay. One of the toughest dudes out there. I'm sure he'll be back sooner than later, but I appreciate y'all having me.
Yeah, his Ripken-esque streak broken here on the show after
it'll never be duplicated, Dan.
Yeah, the Iron Man, but no, Bill will be back. Bill will be back shortly. But in the meantime, Jake, always a pleasure to talk to you, and we've got, you know, it's a quiet time for college basketball and college football news. We have talked a little bit about the NBA draft lottery last night and how it relates to Auburn, especially Todd Pettiford, who is still deciding whether or not to return to college basketball. What's your sense of what Todd should do and what he's going to do?
Well, look, I mean, Todd needs to do whatever, you know, him and his family think is best for him. I'm not going to pretend to be inside the room. I do know, I think he had the second highest vertical max or whatever it was, which, you know, I'm sure doesn't hurt. I just have a hard time believing that, you know, he couldn't increase his stock, you know, with the limited, you know, amount of time we've seen him at Auburn. We know how talented he is, but, you know, having another year to chisel that statue into what you eventually want it to be, you know, I think could behoove him. But, you know, look, I will say this, man, I think it's a pretty good look. If you're Bruce Pearl and company, and you know, the only reason you're waiting to see if you're going to get your star freshman point guard back is because he may go to the NBA. But I've seen, you know, anywhere from 26 to 34 right now with Tahad. So, you know, with those numbers, I think there's a decent chance he comes back.
The thing that seems to set Tahad apart from recent Auburn players that have had this decision to make, you know, when I think about Janai the last couple of years, even Sharif Cooper, And when he was deciding, like, I think that Tahad would benefit from another year of college basketball and actually be able to be, like, he would be a different prospect potentially a year from now in a way that, I mean, Janai improved, but I feel like Janai was hearing a lot of the same feedback 2 years ago or a year ago about what kind of draft pick he could be. And I don't know if a good year, like, I don't know if a year of being, it would have been fun as an Auburn fan, but I don't know if a year of a full year of Sharif Cooper changes what kind of draft prospect he is, changes how the NBA viewed him. I think with Tahad, his role would be different this upcoming season, and that would give more data and more information to NBA teams.
Yeah, well, I mean, and, you know, there's no doubt the hype of him coming into this next year will be way different, you know, even though he was a five-star prospect and, you know, a lot of people knew about him. I think you're looking at Tahad Pettiford on a different pedestal coming into this next season. And look, you know, you always risk injury. You risk, you know, maybe not playing as well. But, I mean, if you're worried about risk, then why do you even play the game? You know, why do you even go try and make the NBA? So I don't think that's going to be something
that Tahad is going to have forefront in mind. But, you know, you talk about ceiling. I think that's the difference in between, you know, what we saw from Janai, who was an incredible player, did a ton for Auburn, and then Tahad. You feel like Tahad isn't even close to his ceiling as opposed to Janai. You felt like he was getting pretty close to that ceiling, and I think he maximized it this past year. So I think that's the difference in between those two guys, including age, obviously. So, look, the decision's his. It's a high-class problem, I will tell you that. But I will be interested to see if you know, you always got to account for every scenario if you're Bruce Pearl and his staff. If Tahad weren't to come back, you know, you look at a guy maybe like Boogie Fland, who just announced he's going to be withdrawing from the NBA draft after playing a year at Arkansas. Is that a direction you go? But I think we're all hoping Tahad comes back.
I think Boogie Fland is absolutely, like, if he's still available and in the portal and Auburn gets news that Tahad Pettiford is staying in the NBA draft, I think that guards like Fland and maybe RJ Lewis from St. John's, if he decides to come back as well, like, I think there are not a lot of Tahad Pettiford replacements out there, right? You might be the A's trying to find Giambi, you know, after Giambi went and signed with the Yankees, but there are a couple of guards that would be, you know, where if you wanted to shop at the top of the market and find a replacement for Tahad, there could be a couple of guys still out there, but they will, I'll tell you what, they're not going to be in the bargain bin, right? Like those guys, you're going to be shopping at the...
You're not going to find those guys as you're walking to check out in those aisles that they specifically placed there for that. I will say, I think it's a pretty good recruiting tool to walk into a guy like Boogie Fland or RJ Lewis and say, hey man, look, to be honest, the only reason we're recruiting you is because our guy did what you thought you should have done in the NBA draft, so let us come do the same for you.
Yeah, you got to go to the aircraft carrier dealer, right, and go find one of those.
You basically got to call Nicolas Cage. You're on the option.
Go find one of those guys. And I'm not great at projecting, like, what, especially when you get outside the lottery, like how guys can eventually become NBA players. I mean, sometimes you'll see a guy and you'll think, you know, eventually, like Naz Reid, I think, comes to mind as like where you saw him at LSU and you thought, you know, eventually it's all going to come together. It might not be before he's selected in the NBA draft, but eventually, like, you know, it's probably going to put, you know, things are going to put themselves together. A lot of folks look at Janai as a first half of the second round kind of prospect. How do you think the NBA views Janai Broome and his ability to maybe contribute for a team one day?
Well, I think if you know, you're an NBA scout or an NBA GM and you look at Janai, you sit here and say, okay, you know, he's not the greatest athlete in the world, and there's some things, even playing at a place like Auburn, which the SEC was the best conference in college basketball, you saw what he was able to do, it's still such a huge step up to go to the NBA size-wise and athleticism-wise. I don't know if Janai Broome is going to be able to get nearly as many of the rebounds as he was able to get with his kind of lack of jumping ability. Incredible instinct. He's obviously really, really long, so it makes up for it a little bit. I think if you're looking at Janai, the question you have to ask yourself is, obviously he's got a high-level offensive game, but can that shot realistically get to a level in the NBA where we can stretch him out, and then you factor in the injury ability as well? I think he does have a natural enough shot to be able to be effective enough on that level. The question becomes, from an injury standpoint and from an athleticism standpoint, when they sit there and they do the math problem with the numbers, Janai's going to have to be even more efficient than he was in college, which is going to be really tough to do because, I mean, that dude, it was, you know, like buying Apple stock. You feel pretty good about it.
Right, and I don't think Janai is the only guy from the senior class of this past Auburn team. I don't think Janai is the only one who could eventually produce in the NBA someday. I mean, Miles is, I mean, he's got the 3-point shot of a pro. It's just a matter of sort of, you know, of tuning the rest of his game. I mean, Auburn's had other players. Bryce Brown had the 3-point shot of a pro, but that wasn't enough to get him a consistent role in the NBA. But I think Miles has a shot, and I'm fascinated by how NBA teams view Dylan. Right, because Dylan's not a flashy guy and probably not going to get picked in the draft, but somebody who he's very good at his job, and there aren't a ton of guys his size with his kind of athleticism that embrace that garbage man, rim protector, dirty work, big kind of role.
Well, look, I'll never put anything past Dylan Cardwell. I mean, you know, his ability to improve every year with, you know, we know he was challenged offensively, but you talk about making the most of your skill set and having as big of an impact as you possibly could with your ability. I think Dylan Cardwell fits that mold, you know, in every way for Auburn. I just feel like the guys who play the way that Dylan Cardwell play in the NBA have to be like 7'3". Like, they just have to be overly huge because, you know, you don't have a shot. I don't, you know, again, I'll never put anything past a guy that works as hard as he does, but I don't think Dylan Cardwell is all of a sudden going to find the three in the NBA. And when you play that way, you have to have some sort of overt advantage physically. That, and not saying he's small, you know, to be honest with you, I wish he'd put his hand, especially knowing what his bloodline is, I wish he'd put his hand in the ground a little bit at defensive end and let us see him go to work. But I don't know if his size with the way he plays can translate into a guy in the NBA that can get a decent amount of minutes.
And there are reasons why not if you're an NBA team and you look at Dylan Cardwell, right? He didn't play that many minutes in college. The free throw shooting is below average. Like you said, he doesn't have a ton of offensive game away from the basket, but the things he does well could be enough to, you know, with the rim protection, the rebounding, the physicality, the athleticism, like those things could intrigue the right NBA team. And I wouldn't be shocked at all if Dylan, he's not going to be drafted, but I could see Dylan with an organization going to the summer league. Like I could see a team thinking, maybe there's something there, and it's not going to, he's not going to develop into Jokic. Right, like that's not going.
Well, yeah,
that's
no,
not
nobody's saying,
that's I mean, not going to happen. But what he does well, like it's, you know, there are teams that could use a Dylan Cardwell.
Oh well, he's definitely worth giving a shot to. And I will say this: there's never been a better time in history in the NBA than right now to be a guy that gives ultimate effort. I think that could buy you numbers. Just in itself with the way the game's played today. But, yeah, I mean, why would you not? I mean, why would you not just open up that possibility for him and see if he can grow, you know, into a piece that maybe you could find a slot for? And I hope it does happen. I'm just I'm just skeptical when it comes to the lack of offense and the lack of just, you know, crazy size with Dylan. But, again, at the end of the day, he's a guy worth giving a shot to, and I think you'll see that.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane and Company here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. NBA Draft Lottery was last night, Jake. How about the Mavericks scoring that first pick? And I mean, look, can you make the argument that they're in better position right now than they were the day before they traded Luka? Yes. Is it hilarious to think that that's the way? It reminds me of the guy who, remember the guy who owned the Dodgers and just made every wrong decision and then sold them for $3 billion or whatever. Like it's a little bit like that, but I mean, I'd love your thoughts on, you know, Cooper Flagg as a Maverick potentially, but a lot of SEC players could be in the lottery as well. Fears, Trey Johnson, Newell, Murray Boyles. Like there are multiple guys we saw a lot of this year that are going to go early in the draft. I guess we start with Flag, and then we get to some of the other SEC prospects.
I mean, Dan, let's be honest. The Mavs end up getting the number one pick, and I mean, come on, man. Like, I was born at night, but not last night. Like,
well, no, and you're old enough to remember.
So
you're
big.
Old enough to remember
Dan,
other lotteries,
think about it,
right?
Dan.
You're old
like,
enough to
really
remember.
Think about it. Your ratings are incredibly down, right? Right. What do you need? You need some big trade news. Like, and all of a sudden the Mavs just decide to send Luka to the Lakers. What a coincidence to play with LeBron. And then somehow, magically, in the world of perfect, with a 1.8% chance, the Mavs get the first pick. Dude, I mean, let's be honest.
The struggling team in the number five media market in America.
I just feel like we're going to get the book about, like, right now, like, the cognitive decline in, like, 2 years when we, like, just all know what's going on.
Right,
but as far as as far as the Mavs go, like, I mean, if for some reason you – and I saw Jay Will talking about this, and I don't think he's crazy. As good as Cooper Flagg is, if somehow you were able to trade that number one pick for Giannis, I think you do it. But unless it is something like that, you've got to go with Cooper Flagg. But let's not all sit around. I mean, this is a Black Mirror episode, man. Let's be honest. This thing is so rigged, it's hilarious.
It is the second time in just a couple of years that a team has traded a franchise player to the Lakers and then won the lottery with shocking odds because Anthony Davis was traded to the Lakers, and then the Pelicans won the Zion lottery just a couple of months later.
What a coincidence.
I mean,
a coincidence. It's the most blatant form of quid pro quo I've ever seen in my life, and it happened twice. Okay, I get it. You won the lottery once, but all of a sudden, you know, you win it again 2 years later. Now I got some questions.
And I love the idea of the lottery, because I don't think having the worst record should guarantee you the first pick. Like, I like the idea of some random element mixing in with that. I also understand that when you tinker with the draft order and something like this happens, people are gonna. I mean, the mind does start to wander, right?
Well, it's not a lottery when I know who's gonna win. Like, no, I think we're using the wrong terminology. But here's okay. So from a just me, not owning a team or having, you know, any real skin in the game on whether or not the ratings are good, would I like to see just randomness? Yeah, I think that's fun. But if I'm somebody that's trying to build a league up and I'm trying to make it as plentiful for everyone so there's more markets that are excited about it, I'm going to go for the most efficient way to draft. And that's when you let the worst team, unless they trade that pick, get first pick of the next crop of best players. That's the best way to do business. Because one reason is there's no chance that you're like, whoa, this is rigged.
Yeah.
No, y'all were just awful, and we know how the math works. So it just, I guess it depends on, you know, the draft style you want is if you have any skin of the game at all or not. So right. That's where I land on.
And the problem, I think, with a lottery, especially a lottery the size of the one the NBA uses, is that when you have, you know, a team that finished, I mean, the Mavericks were in the play-in game for the NBA playoffs and lost the play-in game and subsequently won the lottery, where it's like, I mean, maybe it should just be like the bottom six or the bottom eight or the bottom 10. Like, I do sort of understand excluding teams that had the kind of season that Dallas just had, but yeah, it's funny how things work out, Jake, and the Mavericks. I'm thinking Flagg's a Maverick, and I'm thinking Giannis is a Spur. I'm looking at that.
Yeah, that would make sense.
I'm looking at that second overall.
That to me would be the next logical option.
Looking at that second overall pick, looking at Steph Castle, who just won Rookie of the Year. Looking at the Spurs having a lot of other teams draft capital, because you don't want to just, like, if you're the Bucks, you don't want to trade Giannis to a team for a bunch of their draft picks, because the team with Giannis and Wemby is probably going to have like the 30th overall pick in the draft. So you want them to have the rights to other teams' picks, which the Spurs do.
Yeah, well, I mean, Dan, and again, for the audience out there who really keeps up with college basketball and have done so in the last couple of years, has there ever been a less talked about star player in college and then going to the NBA other than Steph Castle?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, again, you watch this guy play in college, you know, we talk about lack of defense. He was as good on the defensive end as he was on the offensive end, and he played, what, 1 year at UConn, and now he's in the NBA balling? It's just amazing he doesn't get talked about more. But I guess when you don't have a sexy style of game, they don't want to talk about it.
Right, and it's only year one, and he hasn't played in a lot of high-profile games. But I think, yeah, I mean, folks who aren't paying attention with Steph Castle,
I can make the argument, and I think it's validated now, that he was the best player on UConn.
Oh, sure.
You know, last year when they ran through everybody.
And a UConn team with multiple, I mean, because Klingon looks like he's going to have a very solid NBA career as well. But yeah,
Klingon's family landed here from another galaxy 70,000 years ago. So, like, I mean, it's pretty impressive for a human being.
Cannot wait to see sort of what the future holds there, and we'll talk some more. We got time before the draft, so we'll talk about some of the SEC prospects at another time. Jake, tell everybody how they can find all the outstanding work that you've been up to lately.
Yeah, no, really easy. Whether you watch your sports shows or listen to your sports shows, it's Crane and Company. Just go to Google. It's C R A I N and company. We're easy to find, and hope Bill gets better, and appreciate you having me.
Dan. Absolutely, Jake. We will talk to you again very soon. Thank you so much.
All right, bro.
Jake Crane from Crane & Company joining us on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. When we come back, we will wrap up the second hour of the show. Really appreciate everyone hanging out with us. We'll be back with more. You are listening to The Drive.
Don't buy the lie. This is Lee County District Attorney Jessica Venturi.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number two. Dan Peck in the studio. Bill Cameron joined us on the phone for much of the show. We will have an update from Bill tomorrow after his slip and fall on wet tile with flip-flops on was the explanation we got from Bill earlier today. Should have Jason Caldwell from Inside the Auburn Tigers joining us as well, a guy who's been watching a lot of the Auburn baseball team this year. Speaking of the Auburn baseball team, that game should be getting started very shortly on Wings 94.3, so tune on over to Wings 94.3. And when you're not listening to Auburn baseball or Auburn University Athletics, you can catch classic hits on Wings 94.3 all day long. You get the Billy Idol and the Cars and Def Leppard and all kinds of cool stuff. But then they also have Auburn University Athletics, including tonight's baseball game and this weekend series against Ole Miss as well. So in the local listening area, Wings 94.3, how you can catch Auburn University Athletics. And if you missed any of today's show, you want to check out the podcast, Podcast of the Drive, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center, or go to your favorite podcasting platform, search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. All that presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. That's going to do it for us. I'm the only one in the studio, but for Bill and for Drew, who still wish you the best, even though they're not here with me right now, and for Andy Burcham and Jake Crane, who joined us during the show, this is Dan Peck. Signing off. Good night.
Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.